Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. If you enjoy our podcasts, please tell your colleagues and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host again, Ian Lewins, PM consultant based in Derby. And I'm really pleased to be joined today by proper PM greatness in the form of Drs. Danny Hall, Drs. Rachel Mitchell and Dr. Sarah Davies, all of whom are PM doctors based in Dublin, London and London respectively. And I'll say good morning to you individually. Good morning, Danny. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. And good morning, Rachel. How are you?
Hello. Yes, I'm really good. Thank you.
And good morning, Sarah. How are you?
Hello. Yes, delighted to be here.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll see how this sort of four-way conversation goes. Hopefully it'll work really well. And we were going to talk about something that when I came to the DFTB 19 conference, I was really impressed with, really blown away by as an educational tool. And that was your guys' concept of PEM Adventures. So Danny, if I start with you, how did the concept of PEM Adventures come about? Where did it begin?
So it came about a few years ago as a theoretical concept when we were asked to do some case-based learning at a different conference. And I love case-based learning, but I also know that it can be slightly dry just listening to someone describe a case. So we wanted to make it really interactive and really keep the audience engaged. And I was thinking a lot about this, and I remembered those amazing books that I used to read as a child that were sort of choose your own adventure, where you you read a bit of a book and then you get to a point where you don't know what to do next and there are various options available to you. And this was something that we chatted about a little bit as a group and thought, well, maybe this can be developed into a learning tool. And that was really where the concept started, and things just kind of grew and grew from there.
Okay, so that's, yes, I remember those books very, very fondly, particularly one about an abominable snowman, I seem to recall, for some reason. So it's great to sort of have an idea. How did you sort of go about putting that idea together, and what was kind of the theory behind it?
So putting the cases together... Putting the cases together was a bit trickier than we originally thought. So Rachel and I sat down and tried to map out what a case might look like. And I'm going to get Rachel to tell you a bit more about that in a moment. That was a big challenge, and we took a lot of learning after our first coffee morning in a coffee shop near Rachel's house, trying to sort out what a case might look like. The theory is a little bit easier to understand. There's a great educational theory called narrative theory, which basically says that if you embed learning within a story, you're much more likely to lay that memory down and be able to retrieve it more easily. And there's loads and loads of science to support this, and the educationalists have lots of supportive theories behind this, but essentially there's something to do with our mirror neurons and the neurotransmitters that that start flooding our brains when we're listening to a story, and things like dopamine and oxytocin, which are really good at focusing your motivation, your memory, and the mirror neurons, which help us learn. So there's mirror neurons for doing things, so physical motor neurons like kicking a ball, and there's lots and lots of evidence that shows that if you're listening to a story about an action, your motor cortex will activate on functional MRI as if you were doing the action yourself, and the same for mirror neurons for empathy and for emotion. And so if you listen to a story about an emotive aspect, again, you're going to have fMRI changes. And so that is why using the story part of the Pem Adventures is so brilliant, because we can use a case but give it a human element. I'm going to let Rachel tell you more about writing the cases, because they're quite tricky and there's a lot involved in them. But yes, anyway.
Yes. So I guess then, Rachel, when you're sort of sitting down to write these, do you sort of sit and map the whole pathway out that people can choose from?
Yeah. So I guess that's what Danny was alluding to. So, initially, it's about thinking about what kind of case we want to use. And we've generally gone for one of two things. Either something common, which we see in the paediatric emergency department all the time, but that perhaps has just had some new evidence that's come out about it, or has this bit of a different twist to it. Or we think of an unusual presentation that people may not have seen before, but that we feel has an important learning point. And so then we come up with our list of things that we might do. And then it's about sitting down and mapping the cases. The first time we did it, as Danny said, I don't think we thought through how it was going to look. So we would put together an initial scenario and then have three or four different options perhaps for an investigation that you might want to do. Initially, we then decided that we should map different stories down each of those paths, if that makes sense. But very quickly, we realised that was going to mean huge numbers of different variations in answers and in pathways that we would have to map out and make sure were clinically correct. And so that it became quite challenging to think about how we could do it so that we gave the audience enough choice to make it realistic, but that it was actually a reasonable thing for us to map out. And so after mapping a first case, where I think Danny would probably agree we had almost hundreds of different options that by the end that people could have gone down, we were then much more careful and selective about what we would do, and some of the options that we would give would come to the same conclusion. So for instance, if we were giving a child who'd had some trauma different volumes of fluid, our next slide might be a bag of fluid, and then we would describe what the difficulties in fluid management and trauma would be, rather than having a clinical scenario that would mean that the child would react differently to each bolus that we gave. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, Sarah, then, if I can come to you, was the idea that, you know, after each decision that the audience made, there was kind of a learning point from that? So as Rachel sort of says, you know, you can choose one of, say, four fluids, but actually here's some theory behind why this is the right thing to do.
Yes, that was very much what we were trying to do. And in addition, we were trying to ensure that we brought in sort of, you know, bits of recent and relevant research in PEM and acute paediatrics to really illustrate those points and focus on some of the areas where there are dilemmas in management or perhaps the evidence isn't completely clear. So in this way, this was sort of, I suppose, similar to what you might experience in when engaging in sort of classical simulation-based training. You know, again, we've got the audience in a very safe situation in which they can try out their clinical decision-making, have a think around the options that are present, and hopefully by having gone through this process and thought about it in a safe, non-stressful situation, but embedded within a story, we're going to generate some really powerful learning for our audience.
And thinking then in terms of sort of audience size, I'm guessing that what's your kind of idea for an ideal audience? Could it be just one person, or does it ideally need to be, you know, a good few people?
So I might just start to answer this at least, if that's okay, because I just wanted to say that I came into this project through actually being in the audience for one of Danny and Rachel's first live performances of PEM Adventures. And this was, so they were using it in a small group format here as part of a regional training day. And I think, Danny and Rachel, it's fair to say you were sort of trialing it out on us, really. And certainly, so we had about 9 or 10 of us in the room, and I was just blown away by what a fantastic and innovative and rich learning experience and discussion between us as a group was generated by the concept. And I approached Danny and Rachel afterwards and said how fantastic I thought it was, and that was sort of how I ended up coming on board.
I think in many ways, Ian, I don't think there is an ideal size, because I think, as Sarah's demonstrated, it works really well in different settings. So in small group teaching, rather than having electronic voting, which is what you probably saw at Don't Forget the Bubbles, it does really encourage those discussions and those and people to talk to each other about those real controversies in management in the paediatric emergency department. And so actually there's lots of richness that can be gained from the learning between the peer learning that you get between yourselves. With bigger audiences, we have made it a bit more dramatised, if you like. And then we have employed the electronic voting. Because it's too difficult to get group discussions. So I think it works really well in both situations, but you have to then slightly tailor how you're going to do it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Danny, yes.
I guess one of the other things to say is actually your audience can be very variable. So this was originally designed for PEM clinicians. So as Sarah said, our very first pilot of it was at a regional PEDS emergency training day. I now use it with medical students. I use it with advanced paramedic trainees. We use it on the shop floor. We use it in loads and loads of different scenarios, and it's very, very adaptable and very versatile. We love it. It is a really great resource for teaching for us.
So for somebody who's not been to one of these, what does it actually look like then, Danny? What do they see?
So in a conference setting, they will see the three of us on a stage. At the Don't Forget the Bubbles one, we, as Rachel and Sarah were saying, we sort of changed the flavour a little bit. So we were wearing scrubs and we were asking the audience to guide us through managing cases that we had in front of us. In a small group teaching, it's much more informal. We will have a PowerPoint presentation, which doesn't really look like a PowerPoint presentation because there are embedded lots of ways for flitting between different options and outcomes in the scenario. And then it looks much more like a small group tutorial. And as Rachel was saying, there's a lot of discussion in the room and there's a lot of laughter because we try to inject humour into this as well. And lots of debate where you'll often end up with different people wanting to go down different management paths. And so we then try and get them to persuade the group on why their path might be their chosen one. What we always do, though, as Sarah was saying, to make it really safe is we've got our own copyrighted PEM Adventures time travel machine. So we always let the learners know that whatever outcome they choose, they can go back in time and change their mind if the outcome isn't quite what they were expecting. Quite a lot of laughter, but a lot of learning as well.
And Rachel, then, when I watched this, I was really, as Sarah says, I was really impressed, and I sat there thinking, I really want to steal that idea, but I have no idea how you actually sat and wrote it. So is it all, once you've written and mapped out your pathway, how do you go about, it's all on PowerPoint, isn't it, largely?
It is. And so I have to say my PowerPoint skills, all of our PowerPoint skills have improved considerably over the last couple of years by doing this. It's all about hyperlinks, actually, which I'd never really used before. But essentially, they allow you to move between slides really quickly. And so if you click on a certain option, it will take you to the relevant slide that's associated with that. It takes checking and double checking and triple checking, because if your hyperlink doesn't work and you click through to the wrong thing, then you are at a different point in the story. And obviously in an informal setting, that's okay. You can laugh about it and move back. But in a conference, you want it all to run incredibly smoothly. So it is very painstaking. But actually, for somebody like me, who's pretty IT rubbish, it is very doable. And it is something which I think anybody could do with once they learn how to use hyperlinks.
Right. So it is simply embedding that. And then, you know, that's the equivalent of turning to that page
exactly
as you would.
Exactly. Yeah. So you essentially just click on that section, and it will move you forward to the correct place.
Okay. Sarah.
Oh, I was just going to add that there's an additional level of complexity in the construction of maybe a conference style presentation for PEM Adventures, and that is that you obviously have to develop in parallel the questions and responses for the audience voting technology that you're going to use. And certainly we've been very lucky to, I'm very fortunate to have really fantastic tech support on board at both the big conferences we've presented at, who have helped to ensure that movement between our slide set with the hyperlinks and the audience voting slide set, which we haven't yet managed to embed within the PowerPoint, it's really slick and well done. And that's really key, again, as Rachel said, to the smooth running of one of these shows, if you like.
Yeah, because I guess in a small group you can just do show of hands realistically, can't you?
Absolutely.
But when it's a bigger one, and that's an additional level of tech that you've got to account for as well.
Absolutely. It's I'm not really a tech savvy sort of a girl either, and this has certainly been a good learning curve for me.
Danny.
I think the other thing, you know, the technology for running PEM Adventures, as both Rach and Sarah were saying, we have learned a lot and we're still learning a lot. I think the other thing that is probably fair to say is this isn't something that you can mock up in an afternoon to run the next day. I mean, as we were saying with that very first coffee morning, we left without a case. We didn't have any story at that point yet to develop, because we realised that the complexity of mapping the whole process was a level far beyond we were originally anticipating. And we really love PEM Adventures, and we love the fun of it, we love the drama of it, but there have also been many times where I've kind of been pulling my hair going, why did we say that we would do this? This is not the easiest thing. And yet when we come onto the stage at the end, it's all worth it. We also have, we were very, very lucky with Don't Forget the Bubbles, that we had loads of input from the Don't Forget the Bubbles team. They were brilliant at sending us videos of themselves and scrubs, mirroring some of the drama that we see on TV. And all of that adds to the whole atmosphere and the climate, really, of PEM Adventures on the stage.
Yeah. And just then with you sort of referencing that, I mean, for one case to run from start to finish, how long do you think it would take you?
Goodness. I mean, that's a real variable that we can't ever predict, because it really depends what the audience want to do. So if an audience sort of chooses the outcomes that bring the case to a conclusion more quickly, then it can be quite short. If the audience go off on big tangents, which we want them to do, because there's never any learning without going on a nice meandering journey along the way, it can take a lot longer. And so when we put together the teaching for conferences, we write more cases than we need, and we have a think about which are the ones that we really want to present, and then we have sort of extra nuggets of cases that we can pull out of the bag if we need to, if we have a little bit of extra time, or we can bypass if time is getting short. And the same for the short tutorial, the small group tutorial teaching. Sometimes I can do a case in 20 minutes, sometimes it can stretch out for an hour. It really depends on the audience and the learning that they're getting out of it.
Rachel.
I guess the other thing to say is, apart from the people that have helped us behind the scenes, from Don't Forget the Bubbles and the Tech, we also had a lot of help writing the cases from our resident experts, if you like. So some of the cases that we've had have involved, so we had a case about long QT syndrome, and so we used a paediatric cardiologist in Ireland to help us write that. We had a child who had who'd taken an overdose of a diet pill, and so we consulted a toxicologist. So a lot of the cases are written by us, but we want to be really careful that we fact check, particularly the more unusual cases. And so we've been really lucky to work with some great experts, if you like, to make sure that what we're saying is 100% correct.
Yeah, and how long does it take you to write these cases then? It sounds like it could take days and days.
Yeah, it's actually really variable again. It's not something, I think the idea for the case will often be relatively easy to come by, but then the putting it together and the working out the various tangents is the thing that takes the time. It's not really something that you can do in one sitting, even if you had all the hours in the world, because you need to come back to it and think about how the links work, but also what the story's doing. And so often when we're building cases, we will make a start and then we'll meet as a group and go through it. So when we're writing cases, we'll often make a start, work out how, get to a certain point, but then we'll all meet as a group and brainstorm together and go through the cases. And actually having that pair of eyes be quite critical about where it works and think about it from an audience perspective can be really useful. So it can take several months, if I'm honest, to fully write a case, but obviously that's spending variable amounts of time during that.
Danny, yes.
So I think it's very fair to say months is the realistic timeline for writing PEM Adventures. It's also, we meet as a group, but we also run them in pilot settings. So every PEM Adventure that's on the stage has been run at least once with a small group, because as many variables as we might think are reasonable to offer as an option to change the adventure of the story, we'll miss something that someone wants to do. And so there'll be various iterations along the way. And I can confess that the version that we ran at Don't Forget the Bubbles was version 12 of the cases that we'd put together. So they do take a bit of time. And as Rachel was saying, without the co-authors, they wouldn't be where they are now. So it's the concept with the expertise and then the audience input is totally invaluable to putting together a successful PEM adventure.
And do you have an idea of how many cases you guys have written so far?
Goodness. We're probably into the teens now. We're still developing more as we go. They are very variable. So as Rachel was saying, we've got trauma, we've got medical presentations. Sarah's been working really hard on developing an adolescent presentation that we're hopefully going to showcase soon. The ideas are there. We've got more than 20, 30 ideas. It's just putting them together into a case that takes the time. We're always on the lookout for more papers that we think would make a really interesting learning point, and new guidelines as well. So they're building. They're coming along.
Yeah. And I guess, as you say, it's as well as sort of revising or going over educational aspects, it's you also get the here's some new papers, and you can introduce what's being said in those new papers in the PM Adventure style, really.
Yeah, and that's really the crux of it, isn't it? Because it's not just about having fun on the stage. It's not just about having something different at a conference. It's actually about knowledge translation and how we can take a new publication and get it out there in a way that just reading the paper won't do. There's a really lovely example. Rachel was saying about we had a toxicology presentation. So we wrote a case with one of the consultant toxicologists at St. Thomas's, which was a really fun one to put together. And then less than a year later, there was a circular from the Department of Public Health about the dangers of this particular diet pill that we'd written about. And, you know, I would love to be able to see if we could measure the kind of knowledge translation, how many people read that circular and make them think about, could this be a presentation of a DNP overdose, compared to going through the PEM adventure and seeing the same case again and thinking, okay, I need to think toxicology in this presentation. And it's something that is going to be very difficult to quantify, but really that's the crux of it. That's the aim of our PEM adventure, is to embed really deep learning.
Sarah.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, following on from that, there is how you measure this type of learning is obviously really difficult, but there is already some evidence out there around using story to sort of achieve deeper learning within an emergency medicine setting. So, for example, Measle and colleagues a little while ago randomised emergency doctors at a conference to receiving some teaching about safe opioid prescribing, either using very traditional methods and just going running through a guideline, or delivering it not quite like a PEM adventure, but very much embedded within a story vignette. And they showed really, you know, as you would expect, it just backs up everything we've been saying so far, significant improvements in engaging, in learning, in retention of knowledge when it was delivered in this story-based setting. But as Danny said, the key is really knowing how best to measure this. And certainly that's another thing that we have spent quite a lot of time thinking about, is how we get meaningful feedback and how we can, you know, sort of get meaningful data about the effectiveness of PEM adventures as a learning tool from our audiences.
Yeah. So, Sarah, what's the future hold for PM Adventures? Where next?
So, as Danny said, we're on the lookout for interesting research papers or cases, you know, that we come across at work that just sort of catch our eye and we think would convert to a nice PEM adventure. And so we're certainly developing new cases. We hope to showcase some in 2020 at a venue yet to be confirmed. But quite excitingly, we're also in the process of developing some online PEM adventures, hopefully to enable us to reach an even wider audience. And we're working with Don't Forget the Bubbles towards achieving this. As Danny said, I myself am working on an interesting adolescent case in topical area of child mental health at the moment. That's where we're going next.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds very exciting, Rachel, because, you know, for those people who've been lucky enough to come to one of these teaching sessions, that's great. But for those people who can't, I'm sure they'd probably either want to access that somehow or sort of start to think about writing their own.
Absolutely. I think that our aim is still to be able to deliver it in big settings. It feels much more fun that way. But actually, we know that for most people, that's not always possible. And actually being able to sit down on your way to work or after a shift and just go through a case for 10, 15 minutes is also a really good way of learning. And having it embedded in the story will hopefully mean that even if people just spend 10 or 15 minutes doing it, they take away something really valuable from it. It's different trying to put it together for an online platform. The humour and the fun is harder to get across, and so that's one thing we're really working on to try and make sure it still has that same flavour, that same appetite for people, so they enjoy it as much. But obviously, it's a bit of a different experience for them.
Yeah, and so Danny, if I can finally come to you then, for anybody sort of thinking about, who's seen this or who's listened to this and thought, yes, I'd like to do that, what advice would you give to them?
Don't do it on your own. So collaborate with someone who you can bounce ideas off. Think very carefully about the branching points in your story and think about where each branch is going to take the story and what will then happen within that story. And practice it and practice it and practice it before you deliver it. Those would probably be my take homes.
perfect. For anybody who gets the chance to go and see this, do, because it was incredibly impressive and you can really see how much work's gone into that. So thank you all for joining us today, and hopefully we'll look forward to seeing this in some online form in the future. So thank you so much, Danny, thank you, Rachel, and thank you very much, Sarah, for joining me today. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. Remember, you can subscribe to our feed on iTunes and Spotify. Thank you for listening.